Welcome to 33 Tangents, a podcast discussing a wide variety of topics from digital analytics to working remotely to current happenings in business and technology. Your hosts, Jason Thompson, John Narang, and myself, Jim Driscoll, all live in different areas of the world, but work together in the same company. Our regular day-to-day conversations often go off in various directions, and the goal of this podcast is to share our ideas and find new ways to engage with others. So our topic today, and Jen, by the way, I do at least want to start off with this. It's great that you're able to join us for one of these, and hope you're able to make more and more with them. We can have a great round table. So exciting now that you're part of the group. You're part of our little podcast group here. So looking forward to having you on board.
Well, thank you. I'm excited to be on it. I enjoyed listening to the first few podcasts that you guys did and just kind of twiddling my thumbs waiting for my chance. Because I find myself like talking to my phone, you know, in response to you guys, like, oh, yeah, I totally agree. And then, you know, it doesn't respond and makes me sad.
Well, you definitely have a chance to respond today. So our topic today is based on where you and I lie in this whole analytics space is on the technical side. And really, I wanted to talk about designing solutions. Maybe not get too weedsy into specific details of wire this up or wire that up. But really, my thoughts are that anybody can have the technical skills to wire up and deploy an analytics or marketing tag or set up a feed. Yes, you could put an asterisk there that you need other kinds of training. But you know, in the broad scheme of things at a very high level, just about anybody can do those kind of things. It's, to me, it takes a special skill set to ensure that a solution is properly designed leveraging those technologies, whether it be a tag, a feed, or an API call that truly satisfies the need or business problem that's being encountered. So that's really what I wanted to talk about today and really kind of start with that whole idea of designing a solution that incorporates those components versus just going in and saying, you know, need to deploy this component. And then we can get into other things like the key elements or the key characteristics of that skill set, and then how do you approach a solution, and what are the essential pieces of a solid technical solution?
That sounds good. And yeah, I do feel like it's a topic I want more folks to be aware of, because it feels like everybody's looking for people with this skill set and or not realizing that it might be hard to find someone who really has all of the skills that make for a good solution designer. Frequently people get siloed and so down in the weeds of meeting the requirements of whatever they're supposed to be deploying or looking specifically at this new feature that's rolling out, that they're not looking at the bigger picture. And, you know, you might not be able to find someone in your area. You might have to go remote. Or if you find someone, hold on to them. Because it's a very rare skill set to be able to talk to the business, talk to developers, see the big picture in deploying a design and all of that.
It is. And I made kind of a flippant tweet, I think, yesterday talking about how many times we talk to people where the initial conversations are, hey, can you just come in and help understand what we're doing here? Because, you know, I inherited this implementation and the business is asking me to produce a lot of value. They have a lot of questions and it's just, I can't do it. You know, the CMO had a nephew who had an uncle, who had an aunt, who had a friend who worked somewhere that took some class. I think they did our implementation and I really don't know. And it's true, you know, from A to B, it's often a very linear line, but taking a viewpoint at it to be able to ask difficult questions of the data and ensuring that the design is there to provide the intended answers is so critical, and is often overlooked both from a time perspective and from a skill set perspective. Yeah. I'm complete side topic, but I'm working on a project right now to analyze air quality data in Utah. And I've probably spent 2 to 3 weeks designing and questioning. That's the thing you're doing with Randy, right? Yeah, it's a project I'm doing with a friend of ours, Randy, who works for a big data company called MapD.
It's been fun to see his tweets about it.
It is. It's very cool. And I'm really excited to see what all of this data implementation I'm doing is going to look like in their data visualization tool. I'm really excited. But it's taken me so long, and I could have, you know, the API calls and massaging the data into a format that can be read, like I could do that in 10 minutes, but it's taken me 3 weeks to think through all of the nuances of, yeah, but what questions are we really trying to answer? And I think that's one of the things that we missed often in digital analytics implementations is, sure, you can slap some code on the page and it's going to start collecting the data that's aligned with, you know, variable A or B, but is it done so in a way that's going to answer the questions in the way that we want to answer them for our business?
There's kind of two sides of it. Is one, you do have to have the right mindset and experience. You have to be able to speak to business analysts and product managers and all of that, as well as developers. You have to be able to see the big picture and not just have a Jira ticket mindset of these are the requirements for this particular thing that's rolling out next week. A lot of the time it's things like, okay, so they're saying they want to track this new functionality of a new way of adding to cart, but it takes a solution design mindset to say, okay, they want this value for their add to cart location. Oh, does that mesh with the add to cart location that we've done way over here? And how does this flow change if I'm authenticated and thinking of all of those edge cases and ways that it might break and stuff like that? That's really what makes for a solid solution. But unfortunately, I feel like it's the thing that requires the most just plain experience. There's nothing for it, you know, no matter of mere intelligence or training in technical details can give you the experience to be able to know what questions to ask and all of that. And I had tweeted out a few weeks ago that, you know, one of the things that makes it hard to mentor implementation folks and to bring up new implementation folks is that need for mere experience. That a lot of the time the value that I might bring to a project isn't necessarily what I know how to do, but the things I know not to do just based on previous experience. And that's, there is definitely a gap of both the, yeah, we need someone with a mindset, talk to the business and document things nicely, but also just folks with enough experience to know these are the things that work well, the things that don't work well, the type of questions you need to ask and so forth.
So how do we think about the long-term picture or the long-term consequences of not investing in this upfront? Because I think, Jen, you hit on a key point where you mentioned that this is experience, right? You can hire very smart people to do implementation, but a lot of the solution design work, the architecture work is experience. It takes experience both in an analytics capacity, in a technical capacity, and just understanding business and how businesses use data. And that just comes with time, and often with time and adding in those skills is money, in that those people are definitely much more expensive. And so let's think about how we see a lot of organizations today not willing to make that investment, which always interests me. You know, they spend a tremendous amount of money on the actual software solutions and the infrastructure, yet allocating money for people to actually make it work is still extremely difficult. And it's 2018, and we've been having this conversation since 2006. It just boggles my mind. But then in the bigger picture, what are the consequences? And what I see happening is kind of this endless cycle where you kind of skimp on the design, you skimp on hiring someone to really architect the solution, and so you don't get what you want to out of an analytics solution, and so then the analytics solution is often to blame. We went with Product X and it didn't work, so we're not happy with Product X. Oftentimes, the downstream consumers are blamed. So whether it's an analyst or someone tasked with running your optimization shop, they're kind of hamstrung in what they can do, and they often get the blame. And then it's a cycle where house gets cleaned out, new people come in, and then we repeat the process. How can we start educating businesses on shifting that mindset that you end up spending way more money in that long-term view of it than just hiring the seasoned person up front to come in and do a proper solution design?
Yeah, and I do. I feel like a lot of the time when folks want to switch tools or solutions, that I go in there, you know, if you are miserable in Google Analytics because your implementation is all messed up and you think moving to Adobe is going to fix it, odds are you're going to be miserable in Adobe within a year because the same things that got you in the mess in the first place, like, you know, lack of resources or lack of processes and lack of organizational support are still going to be problems. And the same goes for the other direction. If you're thinking of moving from Adobe to Google, sometimes I just want to say, you know what? I have this new, you're in Adobe Analytics and you're very unhappy with it because it's such a big mess. I have this new tool called Adobe Analytics. That's really cool. I'm like, let's just delete what you currently have and start over. It's not the tool's fault. Moving tools won't fix it. It's changing the processes and getting the support and the resources. Sorry, that was a bit of a tangent, but that is the point of this podcast, isn't it?
It is, and I think it is such a critical point because you're right. It's often that the tools get the blame, and in the space that we're in, it's often people that are moving from GA to Adobe because, you know, they didn't have the proper implementation, which often happens with Google because, especially if you're on the free version, you don't want to invest heavily in doing a proper implementation, and so people are upset. So Adobe's the answer, and certainly we've seen it the other way where businesses have spent a tremendous amount on Adobe. They haven't brought in the right people to instrument and architect a solution deployment. They're unhappy with it, so they were switching to Google, and that's going to solve all our problems. It's not. It's just a vicious cycle until you address the underlying issue, which is people.
So to me, one of the problems, though, is a lack of people, and not even necessarily a lack of headcount at individual organizations, but there are so many folks who have open positions. They see the value of having someone with this skill set, and they're even willing to pay for it. It's just too hard to find that person, especially if folks aren't willing to go remote. So I do think that that's a legit part of the problem that can't necessarily be solved by an individual org is, where do you find the people with that skill set once you see that it is an important skill set to have? I think a lot of it is also that people are trying to make very complex solutions. So, you know, start simple where you don't need to track everything at once necessarily and use it iterative and then realize it takes time, especially if you don't have a resource who's really experienced with it. Plan for the amount of time it takes to get things right, because it might be that not everyone can get an experienced resource with the skill set that we're talking about here.
And I actually see another. I think maybe as part of that problem goes, like the other side of the coin. There, you know, the other part of the problem is. I also think there's a gross oversimplification. So it may not always be the organization can't find somebody. It's that they're not putting the true value on that person there. And gross oversimplification is let's just go to on-site tagging. I've seen it time and time again, and a lot of it's done on the marketing technology side. But that then bleeds over into the analytics side where the marketing technology company is coming in saying, all you have to do is just put this tag up. Just put this tag up across your site. And then so when someone like us comes in and says, well, wait, what about this question, this question, this question, we're seen as not so much trying to vet out, is it really that simple? It's that they just said it's just one tag. You know, why are you trying to overcomplicate it? Why are you trying to do this? I've run into that several times. And oftentimes it proves out that, okay, there are some nuances to this tag that we need to figure out. Or we go down this road of, you also talk about other, you know, endless cycles of just constantly band-aiding this one single tag, and I'm doing air quotes, this one single tag that needs to be put up on the site.
Yeah, and let's throw in another potential option here, and that is what I've been calling in some of my presentations the purple unicorn or whatever that businesses want. someone that can do the deployment, someone that can architect it, someone that has a PhD in statistics, can build predictive models, is amazing at storytelling and data visualization. And we want to hire that person and task them to be responsible for everything. And for one, it's often impossible to find that person. And even if you did, they don't have the time to do it. But I tend to use the analogy of the multifunction printer, or really any multifunction device. It's serviceable. It's good at doing a lot of things, but you're going to be hard pressed to have it do any one thing better than a dedicated solution. So it's probably never going to be as good as a dedicated printer or a dedicated scanner, or, you know, fill in the blank. And I think that that's the same here, is that you do find people that do have a broad skill set. But if you're looking to fill very specific needs, it's often better to hire multiple people, one, from a time perspective, and two, you want to hire people that have strong expertise in specific areas. And I think this is a key one. I often see this happening where, and it tends to be, we need someone that is an amazing analyst, can write code, can architect implementations, and they're just so difficult to find. And to Jen's point, in an environment that has so few resources as it is, we're so limiting our pool of talent.
Yeah, I agree.
Sorry, I was taking a big drink there. So back to my question, whose responsibility is it to fix this? I think ultimately this is down to each individual company's level to properly invest in the right talent. And part of that is recognizing the value of that. And I think that's a big piece of it. From an educational perspective, I've had the opportunity to work with a lot of companies, a lot of HR departments in hiring new employees. And the folks that are tasked with hiring new analytics employees often don't even know really what they're hiring for. They have a list of kind of buzzwords and skills that they need, but they really struggle to articulate why we're hiring them and how they're going to fit into what we're building as a company. So whose responsibility is it to help educate these businesses? That I think the vendors have done a tremendously good job at educating them on the need for the software. Where does that secondary level of education come for educating the companies on the need for the people to run the software?
My thought is it rests with people like us. No one's going to be a better advocate than yourself. So using using vehicles such as this kind of conversation and broadcasting it out and talking about what we've seen over the years, because here's another tangent. You had mentioned earlier, and I was actually thinking it before as you mentioned it. We've been having this conversation since 2006. It's now 2018, and we're still having the same conversation. So using a vehicle like this, using social, using a blog, things like that to really evangelize the need for, it's not as simple as a single tag on your site. Yes, having someone that can do very complex JavaScript coding, has front-end coding experience, it is wonderful. But you're only going to get so far with them. Having someone that can talk to the business, someone that can live in that space between the business and the technical, that they can go down and sit down and have a conversation with an enterprise architect and discuss the business need and really advocate for it. Because typically the way the business approaches the enterprise architect is we need this, do this. And that immediately the enterprise architect gets the backup and is like, no, just because you need it doesn't mean I'm going to do it. Whereas this person that we're talking about, the people that, let's be blunt, the people that have the skill set like we do, we've learned how to approach that enterprise architect to sell the business need and then also give them further details that starts to move into their world. And maybe it's not giving them actual code. Maybe it's just the simple step of pseudocode. I found like just something simple as that has really helped to win over that type of person. So then they're really willing to work with you, to negotiate with you.
Maybe you don't get 100% of what you need, but maybe you get 75, you get 80%. And that's enough to get started. And then you can come back for the remaining 20. And that's really going off. But really, I think it's for people like us to have these conversations, advocate for it, and really push the message.
So are you saying that it's going to take a community effort to get there, and really looking at people that are looked at as the quote experts should be taking it on as a responsibility to set the proper expectations and mindsets? The reason I ask is I think as you were talking through, and I don't necessarily disagree with you, but there was a couple things came up. One, there are a lot of agencies and independent contractors that are very talented, but also are just taking advantage of a wealth of work out there and just cranking through the implementation work without thinking through. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say they're not thinking through the design, but they're really just cranking through the implementation because there's so much work out there and they can maximize their take-home pay. Are you saying that they may be doing a disservice to the industry as a whole in not helping educate the need to really look at this the right way? And then number two, you know, what is the reach that it's going to take? So, you know, we can take that on. Other agencies that I've seen kind of take a similar stance can take that on. You know, what's our potential reach? Because at one point in time, Avinash really took this on as something that he wanted to fight. And he had his like 90-10 rule where I think it was 90-10 or 80, I can't remember, but it was something like you should, for every dollar you spend, 90 cents should go to the person and 10 cents should go to the software. And I remember reading those blog posts, and I'm going to look it up as soon as I stop talking to quote when exactly he started saying that, but it was like 10 years ago. And if, you know, if he can't make a massive dent with his reach that is far superior to than our reach, you know, one or two little shops alone aren't going to cut it.
Point about are these agencies doing a disservice and all of that, it's really hard to say because, first of all, there is a ton of work out there that all needs doing. And second of all, it's so hard to find the people and to train them up and all of that. I do think setting expectations is super important. I'll be honest, I've just lost my train of thought. had a really good point, but about are we doing a disservice?
Yeah, you recover and let me jump in and make sure I'm not misquoting Avinash here. So the blog post was published May 19th, 2006, and it is titled "The 1090 Rule for Magnificent Web Analytics Success." And just to summarize it, he says that the goal should be highest value from analytics implementation. The cost of the analytics tool and vendor professional services should be $10. And required investment in intelligent resources analysts, you know, people to make it go, should be $90. The bottom line is for success, it's the people. And, you know, this post that, again, he put out in 2006, I remember reading it the day it came out. It really resonated with me. And he has a massive audience and platform. And if we're still having this conversation 12 years later, I don't know. It's hard not to feel helpless.
Well, I remember my point now that a lot of why it's difficult is because if it's coming from us or it's coming from Avinash or, you know, coming from a lot of the folks who have perhaps the experience and authority to say these things, it's so hard for it not to come off as salesy, you know? Like, obviously, we have a reason for folks to think they need to hire experts and all of that, which, I mean, yeah, I guess, sure, we want to get involved with as many clients and do good work and all of that, but even if I were leaving the industry today and would have no benefit whatsoever from everyone knowing that they need to invest in the people and not just the tools, I would still be shouting it at the top of my lungs because it's so frustrating to see the investment that companies are making into their data and they're not necessarily getting that value back out of it because they aren't investing or thinking about it the right way, getting the right resources and everything. So, yeah, I guess that's part of the problem is how do we get the message out there that isn't perceived in a way that isn't perceived as us trying to get more business because that's really not ever my goal. I'm not a salesperson-minded, a sales-minded person.
I agreed. So two quick points, and maybe we can jump off on the second one. So the first one, I fully agree. And it's one of the things, whether it's this podcast, whether it's the content we put out, whether it's us just helping people out in the industry, my hope is that we're doing it from an altruistic standpoint, and I believe that ultimately that makes us all valuable and we get paid in the end. But I agree, you know, and hopefully, you know, the content that we put out, the direction that we give, while people may still be skeptical, I hope they'll learn that it's not coming from a salesy standpoint. And to drive that point home, I have been attacked multiple times from investors to others in the industry for being a pretty poor business person for not squeezing every last dime out of things. It's just not my style. It's not our style. The second point is, maybe let's pivot this conversation a bit and look at it from a different angle. Instead of saying, you know, this is why it's not working, or these are the things that we want to work and just aren't happening, why? Maybe let's flip it around. We've been in the industry a tremendous amount of time. Maybe I'll throw this back to you, Jen. You've had the opportunity to see who knows how many hundreds of implementations and work with massive and small businesses across the world. I'm sure there's a handful in there that it was working well and they did make the right investments. Are there things that you found from a similarity standpoint, or things that you found in working with customers that it was working, that we can maybe focus on that as, let's look at things that were working and maybe take that as an approach to say, let's understand where companies are doing it right and maybe try to replicate that effort on some scale?
Yeah, it's really hard because after having done this for so long and all of that, and being towards the higher end of principal consulting and all of that, I'm rarely brought into projects unless they're already a really big mess. So I get kind of a jaded view of the industry because, you know, folks don't really hire a principal implementation person if they feel like things are going really well. It's usually because they've got it. Things have gotten so out of hand that they need that level of help. So I like to believe that those folks are out there. And certainly the clients that I'm working with, they are all doing many things right, each of them, and some things wrong. But all the same, I don't know that I have a lot of examples of, here's a company that was really doing it so right that I would hold them up as, see, it can be done, and all of that. I suspect they're out there, but they just don't really have as much cause to hire someone like me.
Fair point. I mean, we definitely take a slice of the population that really shifts our perspective of things, and I think that's important to recognize. So maybe, Jim, I'll throw it over to you. You've been with us a long time, and you've been fortunate to lead a couple clients long-term with us and taken them from where they were in a place of kind of disrepair and really helped to put them back on the rails. And then many years later, in some cases with some of our clients, we're able to take a step back and play more a role of a trusted guide. And they're really doing the heavy lifting, and we're there to be that kind of little extra value to add. Have you seen things in those projects that we can maybe share with other organizations as far as what they did internally to build out their teams that made them so successful?
I think in some cases it's maybe not so much building out their teams. They had a lot of the skill sets there. But what they were skipping on, or maybe they didn't completely see the value in, was the planning behind it, the designing behind it. So they, and the analogy I love to use is a short order cook versus a chef. You know, the short order cook, you tell the short order cook, I want a burger with lettuce, tomato, onion, pickles, and, you know, curly fries. Cook's going to give it to you. The chef, on the other hand, is going to talk with you, like, depending upon the restaurant you go to, or they're going to come in and say, hey, you know, based on the season, based on, hey, where we have the restaurant at, here's some local favorites based on the season, and this is what we recommend to you. And I'm, again, grossly oversimplifying it. But again, you know, I love to use that analogy. And so you know, many of the clients that we've come into, they have that short order cook mentality. I need you to implement X. I need you to build Y. We need Z. And when you come into it, the time was really spent in digging in with them and learning what they really, really needed. And understanding it, you know, they said, you know, we need you to implement X, we need to build Y, and we need Z. And when you dig in, you say, okay, actually, you need A, B, and Z. You know, I will definitely agree with you on the point about Z, but really, X and Y, building that is not exactly what you need. We really need A and B. And that takes time to build, because with some of those clients, you know, we got some hard pushback at times when we would actually, you know, come back with a counter recommendation on what to do, especially as we really started to build out the solution. But as we began to prove ourselves out, and a lot of times it started with very small things, you know, and proving out that, okay, we take the time to really analyze what's going on, craft a solution, and most of our time is spent planning, where then the minimal amount of time is the actual construction of it, the actual building of it.
Yeah,
and
agreed.
After many months of that, and slow and small victories at first, but eventually that slow build comes up to bigger and bigger victories, to the point where then you get to that trusted advisor, where then they come in and they don't necessarily say, we need you to implement X, we need you to build Y. They come in and say, we're hearing about X and Y. What are your thoughts on it? And that's what changes the conversation. So part of it is patience, which, I mean, sometimes I have patience, sometimes I don't. So it's patience there. And part of that patience is not getting frustrated when, of course, they're going to push back. But as you gain their trust, you build that rapport, then they're going to see the value in coming to us as a chef versus telling us to make a hamburger for them.
Well, and frequently, I think people want a chef. They want a person who advises them. I know for me it's a huge problem because I have a developer background. I have a lot of anxiety, and I would far rather just be told, this is the thing you need to do for us to, you know, pat you on the back and say you did a good job. And it's hard for me to sometimes push back, and it took years of being in this industry and doing this work to get to the point that I could ask the question, so wait a minute, what is it you're trying to accomplish here? Because it might be there's a better way of doing it, or, you know, things like that. But there is a lot of developers particularly have that mindset of just tell me what you want and I'll turn around and deliver it. And I love the problem solving. A great example is with DTM. You can deploy DTM without a data layer. If you have someone who can navigate a DOM and do all of that CSS, DOM scraping, monkeying around stuff, it can be done. And I'll be honest, I really enjoy monkeying around the DOM, and like it's like a puzzle to solve, or I don't know, it's a puzzle for me, and I enjoy it. It also is something that I can turn around and say, hey, look, I just deployed it without you having to talk to your developers. Here's your bill, and aren't you happy with my work? But I know that that's going to break on them. Just too much past experience that's not the route that they should be taking. The route that they should be taking probably requires less work from me, which, since, you know, I'm a consultant, means less pay, but that's okay. I would far rather say, hey, instead, use my time to help plan this all properly. And I do think that that's the biggest piece, not just a lack of resources with these skill sets. I think it's a lack of time and a lack of processes, that even if you have the perfect resource who can build the solutions, talk to the business folks, talk to the developers, do the QA, usually analytics is an afterthought still. You know, there is no publication flow at most companies that includes a week of, after the data layer is ready to be reviewed, let's give the analytics team a chance. Usually we are building solutions, tech specs, and figuring out how to deploy data layers on top of sites that are moving targets, with very little heads up from product managers that, oh, by the way, we totally axed that part of flow and added three more pages over here. Okay, well, we have to go change the spec now and all of that. I think that the lack of process and the lack of time given to analytics is a huge part of the process problem, and not just a lack of resources and knowledge.
Agreed. And I think that comes down to setting proper expectations, hiring the right people, and kind of continuing this analogy. It's if you really want someone to be a chef, whether you hire a chef directly or you hire someone that has experience maybe working in a turnkey restaurant as a line cook, and you want to turn them into that, you need to give them the proper training, the proper time, and set the proper expectations, and not just expect the outputs to be there without putting the right inputs in place. Mm-hmm. It's so critically important. And just as a quick tangent, nothing to do with analytics, but it reminded me of this story when Jim brought it up. A friend of my and myself was in New York at a high-end restaurant, and he ordered a pork chop, and the server said, "How do you want it done?" And he's like, "What do you mean?" He's like, "Well, how do you want it cooked?" He's like, "Oh, I want it well done." He's like, "No, we're not going to cook it like that for you." He's like, "Well, I want it well done." He's like, "Order something else. We're not going to cook it like that for you." And that really is the level that organizations really need to be at, right? Now, if you were to go into, you know, most other restaurants, they'd say, "Okay, yeah, we'll cook it for you, whatever the way you want it." But if you're looking to have a certain experience, especially at the high end, you go to those places and put your trust in someone that's been there before. And that's so important. I mean, I could keep going on with these analogies. I think I shared a post on this, but Ben Gaines and I were able to sit down with Takashi in Salt Lake, who owns the Takashi restaurant, in my opinion, the best sushi restaurant in the state. And we were able to talk to him about his thought process and how he thinks through things. And, you know, is the customer always right or not? And he had some very strong opinions about, you know, we've been doing this for 20, 30 years. We know that the customer wants a good experience with us, and we have that in place. And so if you want a certain role, if you want a certain way, yeah, we make slight modifications, but ultimately, if you want the experience, then we know how to set that out for you. And I think the same is true for, you know, an analytics implementation or analytics practice as a whole, is that ultimately businesses need to hire that high-end chef that understands the experience the business is looking to get. And oftentimes that requires that level of pushback to say, "No, I'm not going to give you a pork chop done well done. I'm going to give it to you done the right way, because I know that that's the way it has to be enjoyed."
I agree with that. That frequently we have to, or you know, clients or organizations have to be willing to take that kind of guidance and be willing to say, "Well, here's the thing that we're trying to accomplish," and instead of dictating how to accomplish it, you know, certainly give your ideas, but be willing to say, "Well, you know, if that's the thing you want to accomplish, you want a delicious pork chop, then let me tell you the best way to get to that." But at the same time, I don't know, I'm just going to push back and say I still think so much of it is processes and time and all of that. That if somebody hires us or, you know, finds another resource with this solution designing implementation skill set, it's actually been a big source of frustration for me in consulting over the years, that more and more I'm seeing this Ryan brought in, and the analytics team definitely wants to improve things, and they're willing to bring in a resource with the skill set and all of that. But when the rest of the org is not yet in the right mindset to slow down, unsilo things, communicate, make time for analytics, and involve analytics in product decisions and things like that, there's really only so much an implementation specialist solution designer can do. And maybe it's just my own jadedness. It's like, no, it's not just the fault of a lack of implementators. It is also the fact that so many orgs are still just don't get it when it comes to, how do I get value out of analytics? Why is my analytics breaking? It's not just a lack of skills and expertise. It is frequently a lack of processes. And even if you, you know, find out and you're willing to have somebody tell you, here's how you get a delicious pork chop, if I don't think I can carry that metaphor any further. I was trying to say, you don't have the right ingredients. That's the part that I don't know how to solve for is just time. How do we, and mindset changes.
I know how to solve for it. I 100% believe it's a leadership problem within organizations.
Mm-hmm. So
if you look at organizations, and I'll tell you my firsthand experience, oftentimes the analytics manager, maybe even call them an analytics director, they're not really given a seat at the table, nor do they have someone above them that can be their advocate or voice. And I think that that's where a lot of this begins to break down. I think part of the problem is organizations still struggling to figure out where digital analytics fits within the organization. And honestly, this could be a whole other podcast topic, and it probably should be. And part of it is hiring people high enough in the executive level to run and set the vision for analytics. I think if you look at some of the organizations out there that have very, very strong, either at the VP level or sometimes at the C level, analytics officers that are setting that vision throughout the organization, it tends to address a lot of the problems that we've brought up in this call. But oftentimes, if what you have is an analytics manager or an analytics director, they don't have the experience or they don't have the muscle within the organization to really set that vision to make it happen. When I was on the client side, it was a problem. They didn't know where I should sit. I reported to the director of marketing at one point. I reported to creative at some point. I reported to the CIO. At one point in time, I reported to the CEO. I think I eventually ended up reporting through the CFO through finance. But just look at the clients we work with. I mean, analytics sits in so many different places, and it's not to say that the analytics manager or the analytics director isn't talented, isn't doing their job, but they just don't have the power. They've not been given the title or the authority or the seat at the table to really have the business-wide impact that's needed to truly have an impact outside of their kind of small little sphere of influence.
Yeah, agreed. Well, and I have a half-written blog post because I've been wanting to say this for a long time, that even if leadership's on board, they see the value of the data, they have the vision, there's also the need for a leader who can enact that vision, and that might mean going to the product managers and saying, look, analytics is important. This is the new process we're going to follow so that you can communicate with them and involve the data and make sure that they have what they need to build a good solution. And it means enforcing good QA policies, and it's not just giving your seal of approval. It's helping your org take the practical steps that are needed to make that change and give analytics a chance to really do its job and provide value.
Totally agree. So I don't know that we solved anything, but I think we've probably given people a lot to think about, whether they're working at the agency level, they're working for a vendor, or I think most of our listeners are working for direct for companies on the client side. Hopefully we've given a lot of things that people can think about. And I think I've kind of been jotting down a list of things that came up that I'm like, oh man, this could make for a whole other podcast topic. So Jim, I'm going to send them over to you if you don't already have a long laundry list of things we probably should talk about. But hopefully, you know, that this will start some additional conversations. And again, I don't pretend that, you know, this is going to change the world. Going back to my 2006 Avinash blog post, you know, these things are really hard. And if it wasn't, they would be solved long before then. And, you know, each of us individually will continue to hopefully make our mark and influence people to start doing things correctly. Maybe correctly isn't even the right word. But if we can walk away with anything, let's maybe just do a quick wrap, and I'll let Jen, you and Jim chime in. If we want listeners to walk away with one thing from this episode, what should it be? Let's start with Jim.
One thing to walk away from, I would say, you know, one last time, let's go back to the analogy of being a chef versus a short order cook. You know, there's plenty of work for the short order cook, but the chef has more fun. The chef is able to be creative. So if you have that creative, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm getting tongue tied at this point. But if you have that desire to be creative and not just stamp out, everything that's handed to you, then you want to follow the path of the chef. And so in that case, it's learning to make the case of why you need to go down a certain path, or why your recommendation is different than what the org is asking for. And it's being prepared for, some level of rejection or at least pushback. But I would say, if you really want to make a difference, be the chef. There is definitely plenty of work for someone who wants to just be the cook.
Jen?
I think for me, it would be, if you feel like you're drowning or you need more resources and, you're looking at staff aug or you have open headcounts and all of that, don't just think about getting the more resources, but also about how can we change the processes that got us into this state, or who can I involve higher up in leadership to make it so that if we get a good resource that comes in and has good advice on how to fix the state of the org and not just augment staff, then give them that chance. Find a resource who can do that and give them that chance to actually make those changes first, because then if they are helping just supplement your staff, they can make a much bigger impact. That would be my biggest takeaway, is it might be that your problem is not just a lack of resources. It might be that you need a resource to come in and help you put the right processes in place and get the right sponsorship.
Love it. And I think, that would be what I would recommend as well, is just, being a little bit more deliberate in how you operate. I think a lot of times, especially a lot of us in this industry, we kind of tend to downplay our value. I know I do. I know a lot of the people I work with do. And it's unfortunate that we don't recognize how valuable that we actually are for the organizations we work in. And not necessarily to just rock the boat, but I think it's okay to stand up and be a little bit more deliberate in how we build out these teams. And if investing, going back to the start of this episode, in architects or solution designers is the right way for us, but we're getting pushback, it's okay to not just take it and to kind of go back and say, no, this is what we need to do, because this is what's going to make us the most profit over the long term. Have a little bit more confidence that you are valuable and you do have the experience and the skills to be able to have those conversations. So great topic today, Jim. I think the conversation was fantastic. Hopefully we're able to stitch together some of the beginning, as we had some technical difficulties. We had some good conversation there, but all in all, I think it was a great conversation. And again, I hope listeners walk away with something valuable from this episode. It was one of the more enjoyable ones that we've recorded so far. That's not a
yeah.
That was not
a
knock
on
you. That's not a knock on you, John, if you're listening. I miss having you today, John.
We have a quota. Only three name or two people with a name starting in J can be on.
It just gets too confusing.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely had a ton of fun as well. So thanks for the time.
Thank you, guys.
Talk to you
next time. Have a good afternoon.
All right. Talk to you later.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode. We hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like to reach us, you can do so by emailing podcast@33sticks.com or on the web at www.33sticks.com. The 33 Tangents podcast is a production of 33 Sticks.